Today's episode of the Axe Don't Create podcast is brought to you by Gusto. Gusto offers modern, easy payroll, benefits, and HR to small businesses across the country. They were even named Best Online Payroll by PC Magazine. Get 3 months free when you run your first payroll at gusto.com/creative. That's gusto.com/creative. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axe Don't Create podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. A couple of house cleaning things before we dive into today's subject. I've written 4 books. I think many of you who have been listening for any period of time know that. The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, and Herding Tigers. And one thing that a lot of people don't know is we have free workbooks available for each of those books. If you go to accidentalcreative.com/store, I know it's in the store, but it's free. You can go there and download a free workbook for each of those books. So if you're reading one of my books, or if you want to read one of my books and you want sort of a more immersive, intensive experience, you can download the free workbooks. Again, it's accidentalcreative.com/store. And there also you can get, you know, our daily and weekly plan sheets and some other stuff as well. But anyway, so check it out if you're at all interested. So one thing that I have seen as a pattern in the lives of many of the creative pros I work with, and frankly, many teams that I work with, is this something that can emerge as a cultural thing over time, is that we love to plan escape hatches. We love to plan a back way out when things go wrong, when things go awry. And what do I mean by escape hatches? I mean that, you know, sometimes we are unwilling to put ourselves fully into the work that we're doing. And even when we do put ourselves what we consider to be fully into the work that we're doing, sometimes we have an escape route planned in case things don't go as we want them to go. And I'm not talking about iterating. I'm not talking about learning. And I'm not talking about adapting your methods as you go in order to, you know, to face a changing problem or to better meet your client's needs. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about how we internally sometimes rationalize things that are actually not what we intended to do as exactly what we meant to do. So today I want to talk about 3 areas where we can be mindful of these escape hatches. And by the way, this is especially important if you lead teams of people. I wrote about this. I didn't write about escape hatches, but I wrote about some of these dynamics in Herding Tigers. So I encourage you to pay attention if you lead teams, be looking for these, because part of what you do as a team leader is you create a culture of accountability. When you lack a culture of accountability on the team, then lots of bad things can happen. You know, people begin to blame shift. We slowly drift off course. We're not really hitting the targets we intended to hit, and nobody wants to talk about it. So we'll address some of that here in just a few minutes as we talk about escape hatches in our life. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Gusto. So I know we have a lot of small business owners who listen to the show. You know, maybe you started your business a handful of years ago, and now maybe you have, you know, some employees, and things suddenly got a lot more complicated the moment that you have a team of people who are dependent on you. And as your business grows, maybe you have a couple dozen employees, 3 dozen, 50, 100, 200 employees. Suddenly things can very quickly, complexity can scale beyond your individual capacity to deal with that complexity. And you know, a lot of small business owners wear a lot of hats. You know, we have things that we love to do, but some of the things we have to do are things we don't necessarily want to do. You know, things like filing taxes and running payroll, not exactly probably why you started your business unless you're an accounting firm, right? And that's where Gusto comes in. Gusto makes payroll, taxes, and HR actually easy for small businesses. Fast, simple payroll processing, benefits, and expert HR support all in one place. Gusto automatically pays and files your federal, state, and local taxes, so you only have to worry about it. Plus, they make it easy to add health benefits and even a 401k for your team. Those old school clunky payroll providers just weren't built for the way that modern small businesses work, but Gusto is. So let them wear one of your many hats. You have many better things to do, or things you want to do, right? Listeners to the Accidental Creative get 3 months free when they run their first payroll. Try a demo and see it for yourself at gusto.com/creative. That's gusto.com/creative to start your demo now. We thank Gusto for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. All right, I want to talk about a dynamic I call escape hatches. This is a phrase that only recently came to me, and I realized that it's something that I have done, I've been guilty of in my life, and maybe even am still guilty of in certain ways. And it's something that I know I see as a pattern on a lot of creative teams, especially because, listen, creative work is subjective. It's highly subjective. And because of that, it's highly insecure work. It just is. So one of my favorite quotes that used to hang on my office for years and years, actually, I still have in front of me right now, I have the original quote that used to hang on my office like 15 years ago. It's by A.W. Tozier, and it says, "The man or woman, let's hear, the man or woman of pseudo-faith will fight for his verbal creed by refusing flatly to allow himself to get into a predicament where his future must depend upon that creed being true. He always provides himself with secondary ways of escape, so he will have a way out if the roof caves in." He always provides himself with secondary ways of escape, so he will have a way out if the roof caves in. And I think that we're often guilty of this as creative pros, right? We're often guilty of creating little escape hatches for ourselves. And sometimes we do it in ways we don't even know. We don't even realize that we're doing it. It's something that we do subconsciously to protect ourselves because of our insecurity. Listen, creative work is highly insecure. It is. It's highly subjective. We're going to be judged based upon someone else's opinion, usually. And so we're creating what we think is best, what we think works. We're trying to produce something that we think will meet the objectives and please the client or our stakeholders. We're trying to do work that we're proud of, but often it's highly subjective. We don't know if it's going to be received the way that we intend. And so I think some of us unknowingly build these little escape hatches into our life to give us a way out in case the roof caves in. So I want to talk about a couple of those. And again, this is worth spending some time with, maybe journaling about, maybe spending some time reflecting on. And if you lead a team of people, I want you to think about this in the context of your team and consider, are there escape hatches that we've built into our organization that are allowing people room to escape if things don't go as planned, which means that we're basically dissolving accountability on our team, which means that there's some cultural disintegration that's going to happen if you're not careful. So there are three primary areas I want to talk about, three escape hatches. The number one that I see is procrastination or last minute work. Okay. What this means is that for many of us, when we're insecure, when we don't know exactly what to do, we put the really difficult creative work off, and we put it off, and we push it, and we push it into the future. We push it to tomorrow, or we push it to Friday, or we push it to next week, because we don't want to have to deal with the difficulty and insecurity of wrestling with something we're not 100% certain of. And so we procrastinate, we push it off. Now, we might dabble in it a little bit. We're not really doing the deep creative work necessary to really bring ourselves to that work because of our insecurity. And I think, you know, very often, this is because we don't know that we are fully up to the task that's in front of us. And so we procrastinate. We don't engage fully. And it's a bit of a self-protection mechanism when we do this, because we are, in essence, we're pushing off the difficult work into the future so that we don't have to deal with our potential inadequacy. I think that many people would rather live with the delusion that they're invulnerable than test their limits and discover that they actually have some, right? When we engage in difficult work, and most people think that procrastination is just about, I'm lazy, I don't want to do the work. And sometimes I guess it can be, but more often than not, my experience is that procrastination is about something deeper, something more rudimentary. It's about insecurity. It's about an uncertainty that I am up to the task. And so I'm pushing it off because I'm fearful. I'm fearful of what might happen if I engage with this work. So to counter procrastination, a couple of things. Number one, I encourage you to set step goals to help you measure progress as you go. I wrote about step, stretch, and sprint goals in my book, Die Empty. And I also did a daily creative podcast about it recently. And I think I may have done an Accidental Creative podcast about it recently as well. But step, sprint, and stretch goals are nesting goals that you can set to help you continue to make progress. And so I encourage you to consider how you might build some step goals into your life, meaning goals that are measured in daily increments to ensure that you're making regular strategic progress on these important tasks. If you have a step goal in your life and you know that every day you have to make a little bit of progress, it's really difficult to put off those challenging creative decisions because you know that you're going to be accountable for producing something today. So I encourage you to establish some step goals in your life and then time block those step goals. right? Make sure that you dedicate time every day to working on that really important creative work so that you don't procrastinate, so you don't put it off, so you don't use that as an escape hatch. Now, the reason procrastination is an escape hatch is because if we don't produce something that we're proud of, we can say, well, yeah, but I kind of did it last minute, right? I put it off until the end. And so that's why I wasn't able to really produce something that really knocked it out of the park. It was because I didn't have the time because, you know, I had to do this last minute. I had to wing it. I think winging it, procrastinating are escape hatches that we use to rationalize sometimes why our work isn't up to par. So, you know, I encourage you to put step goals in your life and to time block those step goals to make sure that you're pushing yourself toward those important objectives. The second escape hatch that I see is what I call dilution, D-I-L-U-T-I-O-N, or essentially doing too many things, having too many commitments in your life, but no specific accountability for any one commitment. So what this looks like often is the creative professional who has 50 projects they're working on at any given time, 50 ideas that they're pursuing, and they're making maybe incremental progress on each idea or each project, but they're not really putting their resources into any one of those projects. And a lot of times, this is because we want an escape hatch, right? We're not willing to commit to one or two things or a handful of things because we don't want to put all of our eggs in one basket. We don't want to commit the resources necessary to do that difficult work in case, you know, we fail, right? It's, and if we fail, then we know that basically we have wasted all of those resources. So instead, we keep a very large portfolio of projects in motion at all times, and we make just a little bit of project progress on each one at a time. And as a result, we never really dedicate ourselves. We never step fully into the thing that we know we should be spending our resources on. And again, it's an escape hatch, right? So to counter this, I encourage you to, as I wrote about in the Accidental Creative back in 2011 is when that came out, establish a big three. And your big three are the three most pressing creative problems that you know you need to solve, but maybe you aren't necessarily making progress on. Establish that big three. And then again, time block to make sure that you are working against those very important creative problems so that you're not pushing those off and so that you're not diluting your daily effort by having too many things in your portfolio at any given time. So the challenge here is, do you have too many things going on to make meaningful progress on any given thing that you're working on, right? Is your portfolio too big? Is it too diluted? And diluted to the point that you're not really making significant progress. Also, another way to begin to counter this is to begin to identify your productive passion. If you just do a search on the Axon Creative site for productive passion, it'll bring up a bunch of episodes where we talked about this. I also wrote about it in Die Empty and in Louder Than Words. But I encourage you to begin to identify your productive passion. You know, what is the thing you're bending your life around? What is the through line in your work? What is the consistent thing that all of your work points toward? And so as you begin to identify that, you can begin to put more of your eggs in one basket, right? You can begin to lean more fully into the thing that's being called out of you, and you won't be tempted to use dilution as an escape hatch to rationalize underperforming. The third area, the third escape hatch is what I call backward rationalization or just rationalization. Basically, this means that we, regardless of what the results are, we look back and we say, look at how successful this was. And everybody around us is saying, what do you mean? This isn't at all what we intended to do. Oh, no. This is what we had in mind all along. It's the old adage of, you know, the guy walks up to a farm and he sees on a building, he sees a bunch of targets with arrows in the middle of the targets. And he comes to the conclusion that whoever lives there must be like the greatest archer in the history of the world. I mean, it's all these targets are like all these arrows are like in the bullseye. And basically he says, well, how did you do this? He said, well, it was easy. I just shot the arrows into the barn and I painted the target around the arrow. And I think some of us are tempted to paint targets around our arrows, right? We're tempted to backward rationalize why what we did was successful, even though it doesn't really hit what we intended to do from the outset. And so if this happens on a team, by the way, this can be devastating to your team morale, because the people on your team know the score. They know what really is going on. They know that you didn't really hit your objectives. And if you set the tone as a leader that it's okay to backward rationalize success instead of holding people accountable to what you set out to do. Now, again, I'm not talking about learning and iterating and all of that. We all have to do that, right? But I'm talking about underperforming and then backward rationalizing. If you allow that to take place on your team, then you're setting a dangerous precedent and you're beginning probably the talent exodus for your team, quite frankly, because highly talented people don't want to be in a place where they're not challenged. They'll grow bored and look for better horizons. So you need to make sure that you're not allowing this to happen. So in order to counter this backward rationalization, I encourage you to have clear measures of success. So what does success actually look like in this project? And then at the end of the project, measure the end product and the process, by the way, not just the product, but the process as well, against what success looks like for your team, against that definition. So does our end product match up with the success metric that we set at the beginning? Very important question. Now, the answer may be no. Maybe it's a different kind of success. Okay, that's great. Again, that's iteration. It's learning. It's adapting to the changing problem or to changing client needs or whatever, especially if it's a long arc project. You know, sometimes you don't know at the beginning what you're actually going to end up with. That's fine as long as you have a clear definition of what success will look like when you solve the problem. Compare the end results with the definition of success that you established, and do they match up? And if not, why? Were there strategic decisions you made? Great, that's fantastic. Then you have a rationale. But if you're just backward rationalizing success because we underperformed, because we didn't bring our best, because we just want to pretend like we were successful, that's going to set a really dangerous tone for your team. And your team will lack accountability and people will not perform. Which brings me to the second way that we begin to counter backward rationalization is you need to have accountability for progress. So personally, in your personal life, if you find that you tend to backward rationalize your own work projects, oh, that book that I wrote, it wasn't really the best I could do. Oh, no, wait, actually, it was the best I could do, right? If you tend to backward rationalize things like that, have accountability for progress in your life. Make sure you have people in your life who are keeping you on task throughout the process, especially in long arc projects. Have check-ins. I know when I write books, my editor does this for me. My wife actually does this for me. I have people throughout the process who are kind of checking in with me, checking my progress, making sure that I'm asking the right questions, which is really important, and making sure that I'm making meaningful progress on that work. So who in your life holds you accountable to doing the work? Who in your life holds you accountable to producing what you're capable of producing? Who in your life tells you, hey, I think you're underperforming here. I think that you've built a little escape hatch for yourself in case things go awry, and that is not acceptable. You're too talented for that. Friends, don't build escape hatches. Listen, yes, it's okay to have a plan B. Yeah, of course, it's okay to have a plan B, but that's different from building an escape hatch, right? A plan B means I'm learning something and I'm adapting based upon what I've learned. An escape hatch is, I don't think I want to do the work because I'm afraid of the consequences of doing the work and not being adequate to the task. And so I'm going to build this little escape hatch so that I can, you know, maintain some psychological integrity in case my performance doesn't live up to my expectations of myself. Do not allow these escape hatches to cause you to forfeit your body of work. Okay, so procrastination, dilution, rationalization. If you spot these in your life or on your team, I encourage you to have a conversation about it. Spend some time thinking about this, journaling about this. Is there any way that I am rationalizing underperformance because I'm afraid that I may not be up to the task? Hey, I would love to hear your thoughts, your feedback, your comments about this. Interact at accidentalcreative.com is my email address. You can reach me there or at accidentalcreative.com. Join the conversation in the collective at collective.accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.